This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Putin claims Mariupol. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. On this Friday, April 22nd. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Russia's president claims his forces have taken the port city of Mariupol, but Ukrainian soldiers continue fighting while hunkered down inside his steel plant.
Just days after raising eyebrows for reimposing an indoor mask mandate, Philadelphia has ended the rule.
Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is indicating the central bank is likely to raise interest rates by a half percentage point at its meeting next month.
And there are questions about whether we have reached peak streaming.
It's not like streaming is a passing fad by any extent. It's just sort of like kind of we're at system overload right now. I mean, consider this. Last year, Americans watched enough streaming content to fill up nearly 15 million years of time.
Andrew Keschner at MarketWatch on what we're learning about the lousy report from Netflix. Russian President Vladimir Putin claims his forces have taken control of Mariupol, presenting it as one of the biggest battles in his war with Ukraine. However, Ukrainian forces were still blockaded inside a large steel plant in the city and said they were continuing to launch attacks on Russian positions. A spokesman for Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that almost all of Mariupol was under Russian control, but a fight for the plant continued. Meanwhile, President Biden announced the U.S. would send a further $800 million in military assistance, including heavy artillery, and $500 million in economic aid to Kyiv.
Well, we have the capacity to do this for a long time. The question is, are we going to continue to maintain the support of the international community?
Mr. Biden also said that the U.S. would ban Russian-affiliated ships from its ports and launch a new refugee sponsorship program to take in as many as 100,000 Ukrainians who have fled their country. Is there a limit to the amount of aid and military support the U.S. will ultimately give to Ukraine? Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes says no. Congressman, what's in this latest package?
So there is, there's two separate packages, right? There's the $800 million in security aid, which is really about an awful lot of weaponry. And it was interesting. I had a meeting today with a couple of members, with the Speaker of the House, bipartisan meeting with the Prime Minister, and it was a remarkable meeting because, oh my goodness, the list and the specificity of the list of the kind of weapons, ammunition, that sort of thing that they need was pretty remarkable. And so what you're looking at inside that $800 million is anti-aircraft systems, anti-armor systems, traditional artillery, howitzers, a lot of rounds.
Wow. Wouldn't that raise a red flag, though, among the U.S. if Russia gets wind that it's U.S. jets?
Well, it's not jets. It's not jets. It's helicopters, and it's helicopters that come from an inventory of old Soviet gear, and that's really important because Ukrainian pilots, that's what they know how to fly.
All right. So obviously, we're sending them a lot of aid, but Russia has way more people, way more soldiers. I mean, at one point, does the equipment just not become enough?
Well, that's a good question. And if you'd asked that question 2 months ago, the answer you would have gotten from everybody. In fact, the answer you did get from everybody was, yeah, this is going to be pretty quick. The Russians are going to run right over the place. And of course, that did not happen. The Russians have an awful lot of manpower, a lot of weapons, as you point out, but they're using them incredibly poorly. You have a situation now where you've got, Russians occupying an area in which they are enormously unpopular, where they don't have the support of civilians, where the Ukrainians know the terrain much better. So, yeah, make no mistake, this is still a very, very ugly fight, but the Ukrainians do have some advantages.
We're speaking with Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes, talking about more aid to Ukraine. You've heard this latest nuclear saber-rattling from Russian President Vladimir Putin. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I don't put a lot of stock in it. I know it's the front page today, the testing of this new intercontinental ballistic missile, but I would say a couple things. Number one, that it's more or less routine testing. We've expected for some time that they would test this missile. Number two, we don't really worry about a strategic intercontinental ballistic missile attack on the United States. I mean, that you know, you never say never, right? But that's just that's the doomsday apocalypse scenario, right? What we worry more about is, you know, if Putin really feels backed into the corner, does he use a tactical nuclear weapon? Does he demonstrate a tactical nuclear weapon somewhere in Ukraine? So, you know, look, it's always scary when you use the word nuclear, but what was tested yesterday, I think, is nothing other than, you know, the traditional saber rattling that he's been doing for the last 2 months or so.
Is there a limitless supply, Congressman, of aid and other financial relief?
Well, I think there is. You know, we're obviously providing, as you pointed out earlier, weapons that we haven't provided, you know, to date, like the aircraft. And, you know, I think Europe, even more than the United States, I mean, remember, this is all playing out very much on Europe's doorstep, and that's why you see the Europeans both rearming themselves and being pretty aggressive about getting weaponry there. But you know, what really hurts here, of course, is just the sheer brutality. Every day that goes by, civilians dying, civilians being raped, and that's why the other piece of this is really important, which is that the sanctions on Russia really firmly isolate the place, because they, you know, the Russian economy needs to be brought to its knees so that the Russian people wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, this just isn't worth it.
Yeah. Bloomberg was reporting that there have been some grumblings among members of the Kremlin about the war now. I don't know if that means there are kind of cracks in the armor here, or this sets up the possibility of an inside job to remove Putin from office. How do you see this?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And, you know, it's even for our intelligence community, which is the best of the best, it's hard to know what's being whispered in the corridors of the Kremlin. But it's sort of hard to believe that that's not happening, right? I mean, you know, think about it. Putin sort of sold this as we will be in and out in a couple of weeks. Instead, he's moved his country back 50 years economically. You know, each and every Russian is going to feel the pain of this thing. His oligarchs, his rich guys, can't leave the country. They're having their yachts. You know, these guys have considerable resources.
And then finish up, if you would, just about the potential for things like even tighter sanctions.
Well, they need to happen, right? And, of course, the big thing that needs to happen is that Europe needs to accelerate the rate at which they are stopping their purchases of Russian natural gas and oil. Easy for us to say, right? Because we're not the ones who are going to shut down our factories because the Russian natural gas gets cut off. So I get that it's a serious and complicated problem, but every single person in Europe right now needs to understand the currency that they're sending to the Russians in exchange for that natural gas is getting turned right around to kill children, to rape women, and to commit atrocities in places like Bucha.
So along those lines then, since you brought it up, does that mean we might, or the world might, classify Russia as a state sponsor of terror to allow a new or different type of sanctions, if that's how it's phrased?
You know, I told you I was in the meeting with the Prime Minister of Ukraine just a couple of hours ago, and I heard the speaker say in no uncertain terms that she would support that. So, I mean, I happen to agree with the opinion, but, you know, there is an increasing awareness that we've got to tighten the screws considerably tighter than they are.
Thanks, Congressman. Congressman Jim Himes from Connecticut. 14 minutes after the hour.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PC and tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
The news, first, fast, and free of noise. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Friday. The Philadelphia Health Department is ending its indoor mask mandate, reversing a decision just days after imposing the order. The city of 1.5 million reinstated its mask mandate Monday for indoor public settings, such as restaurants, schools, and businesses, responding to what appeared to be a fresh wave of coronavirus transmissions. The move made Philadelphia the first major city in the U.S. to reimpose such a mandate. Some travelers said it didn't appear the rule was being enforced anyway.
But I'm here in Philadelphia. There is an indoor mask mandate, yet I'm seeing so many people without masks. So it's really quite confusing.
Officials in Philly suddenly point to decreasing hospitalizations and a leveling of case counts. So no more indoor mask mandate. On the opposite side of the country, Los Angeles County is continuing to require travelers to mask up when aboard public transit or in indoor transportation hubs such as airports. The new health office order, effective today, means the nation's most populous county again has face covering rules that go beyond those set by the state. 19 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Biden says the U.S. will send about $1.3 billion in military and direct economic aid to Ukraine. The administration will provide a new $800 million arms package. It includes more heavy artillery as Russia ramps up its assault on eastern and southern Ukraine.
The United States alone has provided 10 anti-armor systems for every one Russian tank that's in Ukraine. A 10-to-1 ratio.
The White House also plans to send $500 million in direct economic aid to Ukraine.
Number two.
Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has declared a state of emergency in Coconino County due to the 20,000-acre tunnel wildfire. The blaze started Sunday just north of Flagstaff and is 0% contained. At least two dozen buildings have been destroyed and residents of hundreds of homes have been ordered to evacuate.
Number three.
Military officials say at least five sailors who served on the same aircraft carrier in Virginia have died by suicide in the last year, including three who died within a week earlier this month. The string of suicides among USS George Washington sailors may indicate a larger mental health problem, and it comes less than 3 years after a similar cluster of suicides on another Navy vessel. Authorities are investigating the three April deaths. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a state law that effectively eliminated abortions in Kentucky after the state's two remaining clinics said they couldn't meet its requirements. The decision was a victory for abortion rights advocates and a setback for the Republican-led legislature, which passed the law last month and then overrode Democratic Governor Andy Beshear's veto of the measure last week. 13 women who were sexually assaulted by former USA Gymnastics team doctor Larry Nassar are asking the FBI for $130 million in compensation, nearly a year after a federal investigation found two agents in Indianapolis committed fundamental errors for not acting sooner on allegations of abuse. The women say they suffered significant and irreparable personal injuries because of the FBI's failure to act when it first received allegations that Nassar was sexually abusing gymnasts. Despite higher prices, we appear to be itching to travel. AAA says reservations for Memorial Day travel, from flights and car rentals to cruises and hotels, are up a whopping 122% from last year. So where are we going? Orlando is the top destination, followed by Seattle, Miami, Las Vegas, and Anchorage.
Nice. I've been to the others, but not Anchorage.
Me
You've been
either.
To Alaska?
No, I have not.
It's on my list. All right, we'll leave tomorrow. Coming up next, have we maxed out our interest in streaming? Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect? The taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending time with us. Media companies keep dueling for more streaming subscriptions, but viewers might be tapping out in the clash for their attention and their cash. What does the recent bad news from Netflix mean for streaming in general? Insight from Andrew Keschner, reporter at MarketWatch. Andy, what can we take from this?
It's not like streaming is a passing fad by any extent. It's just sort of like kind of we're at system overload right now. I mean, consider this. Last year, Americans watched enough streaming content to fill up nearly 15 million years of time, just in 1 year. And many people will be spending around 2 in 10 Americans pay between $20 to $30 every month for their streaming service or services, and 17 pay between $30 and $50 every month for that. And so, you know, I mean, people are making the investments. They love the content. They, you know, it's a part of our lives now more than ever.
We're speaking with Andrew Keschner, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. His story is called "Have We Finally Hit Peak Streaming?" It's a follow-up to Netflix reporting a loss of subscribers for the first time. Other streamers have to be watching this, right? The likes of Disney, Hulu, HBO, Amazon Prime, Apple.
That's right. Yeah, they. That's what analysts are saying. It's like, kind of looking at Netflix as the benchmark because, I mean, really, there's you know such a giant in this space, coming up against these challengers, and so the thinking is sure. I mean, maybe Netflix has, you know, it's specific issues that that analysts and people think they need to address. But I mean, the general issue of again, are we tapped out? And just so it's clear, I think there has been a while, long ago when they did lose subscribers, but this is the first time in a very long time, to my understanding.
Okay. And then it was immediately floated that Netflix might pursue an option in which they charge less per month for a package, but those services would be supported by advertisements.
Right. And you know, and the question again is are consumers gonna, you know, put up with it? Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. I mean, and another question is. Yes, you know, in this earnings report, Netflix talked about the fact that there's an estimated, maybe it's like 100 million households that are getting their streaming services, they're getting Netflix for free through some password sharing. And so they're saying, you know, we could, you know, end that and then, you know, turn that into some money for us, a new revenue stream for us. But the question, the open question is how many of those 100 million are going to say, okay, now I'm going to pay? I actually don't know one way or another, but that's another thing. That's another big question mark here.
I mean, broadly speaking, we're still adding subscription services, correct?
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, we have Apple TV and we have Roku and Peacock and Discovery Plus and HBO Max and Paramount Plus. And I think, you know, CNN Plus, and I heard some reporting that was hitting some, off to a rocky start.
Headwinds, as they say, right?
Headwinds, right. So, yeah, I mean, it's like the hits just keep on coming, or do they here?
Thanks, Andy. Andrew Keschner, reporter at MarketWatch. Netflix on Tuesday, by the way, reported a first quarter net loss of 200,000 subscribers at a time when analysts were expecting 2.5 million subscription additions. The streaming giant forecasted the loss of 2 million subscribers in the current quarter. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. The way you use the internet has changed dramatically over the last decade, but security tools for the most part have stayed the same. Between your photos, finances, devices, and connections, your world is more online than ever. Aura provides complete digital security all in one easy-to-use app. Aura protects you from the worst of the internet so you can still enjoy the best of it with digital security protection to keep your online finances, personal info, and tech safe from threats. It gives me peace of mind to know Aura protects me from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and so much more with one simple subscription. All plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds, and experienced U.S.-based customer support is ready to help. For a limited time, Aura is offering our listeners a 30-day free trial when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get complete protection, huge savings, and a 30-day free trial. That's A-U-R-A, aura.com/Gordon. Aura, the new standard in digital security.
Your brain's morning workout. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday, April 22. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Russia says it controls Mariupol. U.S. gives more aid to Ukraine. President Biden confused the Title 42 border policy with the federal mask mandate when answering a reporter's question. CNN Plus shutting down a month after launching. Apparently, programs like Parenting Advice with Anderson Cooper were not a hit. A video shows former boxing champ Mike Tyson punching a man behind him on a flight. And after blowing a huge lead to Memphis last night and losing, TNT analyst Charles Barkley called the Timberwolves dumber than rocks. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by Indeed. Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit. In time for Earth Day today, you may have noticed that workplace sustainability efforts got shelved in the name of hygiene during the pandemic. Now, office environmentalists are coming back to work. Callum Borchers, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, has spotted the trend. Cal, what are you seeing?
Well, what I see is the office environmentalist, and there's at least one in almost every office. There's the person who kind of like nudges their colleagues to like, hey, make sure that goes in the recycle bin. Bike to work if you can. And oh, by the way, compost those food scraps. Like, you know this person. Maybe you are this person in your office. These people have been kind of quiet, Gordon, for a couple of years for obvious reasons, right? Everything was sort of like shrink-wrapped in plastic, and we went back to the disposable cups instead of the shared coffee mugs in the name of hygiene, right? I mean, it was a scary time for a long time. Oh, how's this virus going to spread? But we learned it really spreads primarily through the air, and we're hopefully coming out the other end of this thing. And so these environmental folks, especially with Earth Day this week, are vocal once again, and they've had enough of the compromising and the backtracking on the sustainability efforts of the last 2 years.
All right, so you spoke to this woman in a San Francisco office. Her name is Marcella. What's she saying about all this? What's she going through?
Yeah, well, so she's a fun person to talk to because she works in a co-working space. So she's surrounded by people in a lot of different types of businesses, but she herself leads a nonprofit that focuses on marine conservation. So she is obviously very sustainability-minded. And so she sort of bit her tongue when they put away all the mugs and went back to the reusable or the disposable, I should say, coffee cups. But now she's tired of being quiet. And she's like, look, it's really disconcerting when I see folks getting back out there with their, with the throwaway cups and the lids and the sleeves to help insulate it. It's like all these different things that are going to go in the trash because, oh, by the way, you surely were brewing your own coffee at home during the pandemic and using a proper mug. So why are we using the pandemic to go back to bad habits? That's how she's feeling.
Wow. I almost get the sense that there's a parallel between, say, what kids may have lost in education while doing Zoom meetings from home versus, the knowledge, perhaps, or habits we forgot about recycling while we were home.
Yeah, there absolutely is a parallel there. I mean, there were some good side effects, don't get me wrong. I mean, at the same time that we were, getting everything delivered to our doorsteps, and so there was this huge spike in packaging, we also, of course, lowered our emissions. There was a lot less business travel, for example, or people were driving less in general. But now those things are ticking back up. We were just reporting last month about the huge return of business travel. And of course, we know that's one of the biggest carbon spewing things any of us can do. It's jetting all over the country or the world to conferences and the like. And so we're going back to that. And again, it's making these climate conscious people in offices really cringe when they say, hey, we've hung on now to the disposable everything, right? If you have a catered lunch in the office now.
Another person you talked to, this Erica Saltzman, the healthcare software firm in New York. How does she see things?
Yeah, well, hence the headline about the colleague who's secretly sorting the recycle bin. Erica Saltzman is that person, and God bless the effort, because she is a pretty high-ranking person in her company. She's part of the leadership team. She helped nudge the company to issue monogrammed plates, glasses, and mugs to everybody when they came back to the office. And the thinking was, look, if other offices are going back to paper and plastic because people are a little squeamish about communal dishware, Well, here's a solution, right? We'll give you your own personalized set. Nobody else will use it, but it will also be washable and it won't be filling up the garbage bin. But of course, some amount of waste is inevitable. And she has formed a small group of colleagues and they take turns, Gordon. They'll go into the trash bin by hand. And if there's a milk carton that doesn't belong in there, they'll fish it out and put it in the recycle bin.
How about that? Wow. And then there was the woman in Columbus, Ohio, right? Then she put like a little handwritten note or something on.
Yeah, she's quite a poet. This woman is named Liz DeForest, and she was working at a big investment bank in Columbus, Ohio. And she told me it was actually on Earth Day several years ago. And she wrote a little haiku on a sticky note and slapped it on the kitchen cabinet. And it was met with total silence. It went like this. Every day we use one sleeve of styrofoam cups, consider a mug. That was her little message. And she says it hasn't really kicked in. And so now, Gordon, she's a remote worker and she only flies in to an office once a quarter. And she's like, you know, it's hard to be so influential as a remote worker.
Right. Thanks, Cal. Callum Borchers, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, why you should not take cooking advice from author Stephen King.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know author Stephen King is known for doing one thing extraordinarily well, scaring the living daylights out of us. And that's just what he did on Twitter this week, but not the way he usually does. On Tuesday night, King tweeted out a dinner recipe to his 6.5 million followers, which left many of them horrified. The tweet read, "Get a nice salmon fillet at the supermarket, not too big. Put some olive oil and lemon juice on it. Wrap in damp paper towels. Nuke in the microwave for 3 minutes or so. Eat it. Maybe add a salad." Twitter quickly ignited over King's unappetizing recipe. Jeez. Many saying that cooking salmon in the microwave is the scariest Stephen King story to date. Others joked that the smell coming from fish cooking in the microwave is more horrifying than anything that ever came from King's typewriter. Others defended King, saying that the wet paper towel is the key, helping to steam the fish efficiently. The negative reactions prompted King himself to respond on Twitter, telling the naysayers in all caps, "Don't knock it if you haven't tried it."
Seriously? Did Twitter suspend him for this?
I know. This should be under some sort of review.
This is dopey. I mean, we expect more from like our greatest authors.
Yeah, I'm not sure what prompted this either. Yeah. I mean, I guess it happened around 10 o'clock at night, so I'm guessing he had just finished up this dinner. Oh, you know, maybe it was a quick dinner, last minute type of thing. He throws the salmon in the microwave, but then you have to live with that smell in your house for days afterwards, right? I mean, how long is it going to take for that salmon smell to leave your house?
In the microwave, I mean, I think you catch a little break. It's not like he did it on a pan, I guess, where maybe the oil is splashing somewhere.
Have you ever been around when somebody cooked fish in the microwave?
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those guys.
That's right. You do that. I forgot about that. Yeah, you went out to the store and you put fish in our microwave here. I don't remember it smelling this bad, but again, salmon, I think, is particularly pungent, as far as I know.
I'm just surprised that the best he came up with is olive oil and lemon juice. I mean, that's standard. What makes salmon interesting is, are you going to put a little cayenne pepper on there?
Right.
Maybe a little, onion salt or something like that. But I mean, what is this? Yes, Stephen, come on.
Unlimited resources at his disposal. Right. This is what he came up with. He probably could have been a personal chef if he wants.
Got to be better, Mr. King.
And in what vaguely sounds like a story that Stephen King might tackle, a scary-looking cat is about to become mayor of a Michigan town. The town of Hell, which offers anyone the chance to serve as mayor for one day for $100, agreed to allow Jinx the cat to become the town's first animal mayor. Jinx, who lives in California with her owner, has 735,000 followers on TikTok and 400,000 followers on Instagram, and is known for her unusually big eyes and feet. Jinx will be sworn in as mayor virtually on Sunday. She will serve as mayor for the day, ending with a call from Reverend Vaughn, the town's minister of hell, informing her of her impeachment.
Wow.
I mean, this is one frightening-looking animal, I'm not going to lie.
I looked at the cat, and I feel like she saw into my soul. I had to look away immediately.
Yeah, I actually did. I kind of was taken aback at my computer out in the newsroom. I think Jen saw me jump when I clicked on the picture. That is definitely the mayor of hell, for sure.
It seems like her eyes are propped open permanently and that she does not blink.
Yeah.
That was the impression I got.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope this cat blinks, but I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't.
After an encounter, I feel like I'd be talking with people saying things like, "Did she look directly at you?"
Right.
Yeah. Oof. Okay, Jinx. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Tired of trying to separate fact from fiction? Get your information from a source you can trust. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. In most of the country, as you know, rent prices are skyrocketing thanks to a red-hot housing market and a record high rate of inflation. But in a handful of tech hubs, rent is actually lower than it was at the onset of the pandemic. Doesn't mean there are bargains to be found, however. A new report from Realtor.com found that median rent prices in San Francisco for small apartments, like studios, are lower than they were in March 2020 by 13%. One bedroom's down 3.3%. An hour north in San Jose, rents for studios, one bedrooms and two bedrooms, all lower than they were before the pandemic, even if only by less than 3%. In Chicago, the median rent for a studio apartment, 10.4% lower. And in Washington, D.C., studios are renting for 0.5% less. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
New satellite images show apparent mass graves near Mariupol, where local officials accuse Russia of burying up to 9,000 Ukrainian civilians to conceal the slaughter taking place in the ruined port city that's almost entirely under Russian control. The images emerged hours after Russian President Putin claimed victory in the battle for Mariupol. Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal.
If we do not stop this war together, the losses will increase dramatically. Infrastructure losses alone are already higher than $100 billion.
Putin urged Ukrainian fighters left in a massive steel plant in Mariupol to lay down their arms.
Number two.
Police in Duluth, Minnesota say a man shot and killed his aunt, uncle, two cousins, and a family dog while they were sleeping Wednesday. Police Chief Mike Tuscan says police responded to a report of an individual experiencing a mental health crisis.
Duluth police officers approached the home, knocking on the door, and as they were knocking, heard what they believed to be a single gunshot.
The suspect has been identified as 29-year-old Brandon Cole Skogstad. The victims ranged in age from 9 to 44.
Number three.
The Republican-held Florida legislature has passed a bill seeking to dissolve a special district that allows Disney to act as its own government within the outer limits of Orange and Osceola counties. The measure was spearheaded by Governor Ron DeSantis, who is locked in a bitter and public feud with the entertainment giant over the company's denouncement of Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay bill. The dispute is likely to end up in court. Philadelphia is ending its indoor mask mandate, abruptly reversing course just days after people in the city had to start wearing masks again amid a sharp increase in infections. The Philadelphia Health Department now cites decreasing hospitalizations and a leveling of case counts. And the Supreme Court, in a unanimous ruling, has resurrected a lawsuit over the ownership of a French painting now in the possession of a museum in Spain that a Jewish woman surrendered to the Nazis in 1939 so she could flee Germany. The ruling, which said a California law, not a Spanish one, should have been used to decide the case, gives new hope to the descendants of the woman that they can recover the painting, which is worth millions.
Oh, that's wild. I guess Spain will have something to say about that.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
Thanks for joining us. A Virginia high school wrestler is proving that any dream is achievable through hard work and dedication. Adonis Lattimore, who's 17, was born without a right leg, a partial left leg, and only one fully functioning arm. Despite doubts from his peers throughout his life, Adonis won Virginia's Class 6 106-pound wrestling championship, capping off his high school career in a major way. ABC News says his wrestling career began in elementary school when his dad found a flyer advertising a local wrestling club in Virginia Beach and brought him to a practice. He was hooked and knew he wanted to continue in the sport. In a now viral moment, his father, Gerald, could be seen running onto the mat to embrace his son with an enormous hug after his championship. Young Adonis is now planning on heading to college to continue wrestling and pursue a degree in computer science. Through his journey, he hopes to inspire other young athletes to enjoy the ride and do whatever they're passionate about. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.